Jeremiah this morning.
Jeremiah. Quick review, Jeremiah was 100 years after Isaiah, and Isaiah had managed to save Jerusalem from all the harassment and the hassle of the enemy coming in. The rest of that place was destroyed, but not Jerusalem. Jeremiah comes along, and he's going to do what he can to keep Jerusalem going, and it doesn't work, but he's going to try. And I've got to give him credit for trying, you know. Why sometimes you want to quit? Well, we know that he tried to quit one time, too. Everything else had fallen out there. Jeremiah's message, I listed some of the things that were his message, but what I want to realize is Jeremiah's biggest message is he is going around telling everybody that they've rejected God's words. You can come up with different ones. I mean, he's very specific. They're going to be destroyed, da-da-da-da, all that sort of a thing, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Are there... No, there wouldn't be there yet, so I can go da-da-da-da-da. But people that were along, prophets that were in his time as well, going on with their ministry, was Ezekiel, Daniel. Daniel was in the palace, so he was up in the political realm, I suppose. Habakkuk and Zephaniah were actually helping Jeremiah. Nahum and Obadiah. So all these guys that we read about in the Old Testament, if we could ever remember these things, we would recognize that, again, that Bible doesn't always just go from book to book to book to book to book to book to book. A lot of those books are at the same time, which is something a person can hang on to and remember if they all possibly can. Now, so we'll go into part two. We're not going to finish Jeremiah today. I'm not in a hurry to get through Jeremiah. You should know me by now that I get into Jeremiah. Sit down, Amanda. Hurry up. I'm in no hurry to get through it. Jeremiah, I'll say it again, is America today. And if we could understand what's going on in America today, Jeremiah would make a lot more sense to people. And if we could understand what's going on in Jeremiah, people would understand what's going on in America today. And to hear from Jeremiah is to hear from what a pastor should be saying today. And if he wants to quote Jeremiah, have at it. Because you can't say it any better than Jeremiah says what he says. So, what's going on in America? Well, America's rejected God's words. A little over 100 years ago, it became official. American Christianity is worshiping an unknown God, and is increasing. Most of your friends, most of our friends out and relatives out in this Christianity that I said last week are praying to an unknown God. They don't know who they're talking to. They're not talking to God. And the only way we can say that is to understand the scriptures again. So America's Christianity is worshiping an unknown God. America is all that's left in the world still. I mean, there's no better place to go. You wouldn't want to hop on a yacht somewhere and buzz over to some island somewhere. I mean, they've all gone to another God, a false God, if they've gone to any God at all. And if they haven't gone to any gods, they've gone to themselves, which makes them gods. So there's no place else to go. I mean, it's not like we're in Holland a couple hundred years ago. Oh, let's take the big stretch and let's get to America and let's start anew. We can't do that. There's no place to go. Just like Jerusalem, there was no place left to go. And there was Jeremiah telling those people who had no place else to go that they had rejected God's words and the sorrow and the misery and the frustrations that they were living could be fixed if they just turned to God's words. And they didn't. And how do they turn to God's words? Jeremiah. Today we have the book. That's just the way it's going. And America needs to fall. America needs to get out of the way before this whole biblical world government thing, not biblical, but the Bible explains that the world government can do its thing. America has to get out of the way. So America is getting out of the way by jumping in the same boat. And they're all going back to Rome. And someday, the Antichrist will make this marvelous entrance, Revelation chapter 6. And in the meantime, we see an increase of flatteries and talk about peace. Because that's what all the modern Christians are talking about, is peace, peace, peace. Flattery, flattery, flattery. And they're driving out the people out of the churches that really want to be fed the truth. I should give you a letter that a lady wrote to me from South Africa. What happened to their Bible-believing church down there? And a pastor that moved in there was going to do the foot washing thing. And he asked, "Does anybody have any questions?" And so she challenged that just by asking, "Can you show me the scriptures where we should do that, or that's written to us?" And he just raked her over the coals, and you can read about it, and it's absolutely what all pastors are starting to say to their people if they challenge what they're doing. It's amazing. They don't respond with a book. They respond with an attack. So that's what's going on in America and American Christianity, and I know this is a real joyful start for the morning, but that is what's going on. That is what's going on. So, if you get your joys out of hearing something said by God that nobody else can say better than God through this Jeremiah guy, you should enjoy the Sunday school this morning, because, like I say, nobody says it better than Jeremiah. So let's go to Jeremiah 13. We're just picking out highlights, and you've probably got highlights that I haven't highlighted. I'm sure you do. We can't go through all the highlights, because you basically have to read Jeremiah. So we're just going to look at some verses that I've seen over these years become pretty special, and maybe we'll give you a chance sometime. Jeremiah 13. This is a story to where I'm so glad that I don't have to be that object lesson preacher. I am so glad that all I have to do, as hard as it is just show you verses and preach at you and grump at you, you know, and try to keep the ship afloat, et cetera, et cetera. I guess that's your job, to keep the ship afloat. It's kind of a thing. But this thing in Jeremiah chapter 13, what he had to do, this is what the Old Testament is so spectacular. If somebody says there's things that Old Testament is also to us, well then ask them if their pastors had to do this yet. Right here we go, verse 1. Thus saith the Lord unto me, go and get thee a linen girdle and put it upon thy loins. Okay, what does that mean? Go get a linen girdle and put it on. Now, if I did something like that, okay, and put it not in water. So, I got a girdle, according to the word of the Lord, and put it on my loins. And the word of the Lord came unto me the second time, saying, take the girdle that thou hast got, which is upon thy loins, and arise, go to Euphrates, and hide it there in a hole of the rock. Okay. So I went and hid it by Euphrates, as the Lord commanded me. And it came to pass after many days that the Lord said unto me, arise, go to Euphrates, and take the girdle from thence, which I commanded thee to hide there. Okay, go get it. Then I went to Euphrates and digged. There's your grammar, digged. You dig, digged, and dag, and dug. You'll learn that as you get into this thing. I went to Euphrates and digged, and took the girdle from the place where I had hid it. And behold, the girdle was marred. It was profitable for nothing. It had rotted. Of course it had rotted. Then the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, thus saith the Lord, after this manner will I mar the pride of Judah and the great pride of Jerusalem. This evil people, which refuse to hear my words, which walk in the imagination of their heart, and walk after other gods to serve them, and to worship them, shall even be as this girdle, which is good for nothing. For as a girdle cleaveth to the loins of a man, so have I caused to cleave unto me the whole house of Israel, and the whole house of Judah, saith the Lord, that they might be unto me for a people, and for a name, and for a praise, and for a glory, but they would not hear. Therefore thou shalt speak unto them this word, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, every bottle shall be filled with wine, and they shall say unto thee, do we not certainly know that every bottle shall be filled with wine? Then shalt thou say unto them, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will fill all the inhabitants of this land, even the kings that sit upon David's throne, and the priests, and the prophets, and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, with drunkenness. And I will dash them one against another. And it just goes on. I will dash them one against another, even the fathers and the sons together, saith the Lord. I will not pity, nor spare, nor have mercy, but destroy them. And there he says fathers and the sons. So the family gets destroyed from within. So this is what happens to God's people when they did what? Verse 10. Now, is this America? Refuse to hear my words. Walk in the imagination of their heart. You know, they always say feeling. They always say God told me in my heart. That's an imagination. Because God doesn't do that. They walk after other gods, serve them, worship them. American Christianity is hugely big on worshiping today. And Paul says you're worshiping an unknown God. And it'll just be like this girdle. America will become like this girdle. It's just going to rot. Fall apart and rot. Now, but see, America is not God's people. We are. We're not going to rot. But you know, and I know, by watching things within your family and your personal lives, you can still fall apart. So we can still learn from Jeremiah what happens when you reject the word of the Lord. He's just not going to do that to us. This is just what's happening. And it's beyond me. It honestly is beyond me why Christians don't see what's going on in their family. Now, I have to ask, what went on in your family? Why are you limping? Oh.
You thought he lost.
Yep, some things just happen. Marcy goes, yep, it's one of those mom things. Dad goes, it made him tough. Anyway, so there's the first point. Jeremiah 13, 1 to 15 is just it's just quite a story. The old story of Jeremiah and the girdle. Well, let's go to chapter 15. These guys could only hear from Jeremiah. If they didn't hear from Jeremiah, they didn't hear what God had to say. How did Jeremiah hear from God? He didn't have a Bible. God talked to Jeremiah. And these people didn't see what Jeremiah was saying. We have a Bible. We have everything God wanted said right there in print. It just amazes me. 15, chapter 15, one verse 16. Thy words were found, and I did eat them. And thy word was unto me the joy and rejoicing of my heart. For I am called by thy name, O Lord God of hosts. There's an example where he found God's words, he ate them, and it was a joy and rejoicing. Look at Revelation chapter 10, just for a second here. Now I know Revelation 10 is the tribulation, of course. But there certainly is a different response to words. And you know that I don't believe, and I don't think you do either, that we're in the tribulation. But I also don't believe that we're in the Laodicean church age, because I believe that the Laodicean church age has to be the tribulation when you look at the description of it, when you realize Paul's teachings. But we also know we're getting closer and closer to the tribulation. So things that are talked about in the tribulation, in the Bible, in Hebrews, Peter, James, 1st, 2nd Peter, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, Jude, we're seeing those things get closer and closer. Doesn't mean we're in the tribulation. That means we're running out of time. So if we read chapter 10, we're going to see what it's like in the tribulation with a little book. And it's just an interesting little thing about this little book. And what do people do today? When you give them God's words, if they actually do eat those words, do we get what Jeremiah got there? Joy and rejoicing. Thy words were found, and I did eat them, and thy word was unto me the joy and rejoicing of my heart. Here's what they say in Revelation chapter 10. And I saw, this is what John is seeing coming up ahead of time. And I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head. And his face was as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire. And he had in his hand a little book, open, and he set his right foot upon the sea, and his left foot on the earth, and cried with a loud voice, as when a lion roareth. And when he had cried, seven thunders utter their voices. That's quite a thing to see, you know, really. Because you're not reading any scientific little science fiction. I mean, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. And when the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I was about to write, and I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. Boy, don't you want to know what they said?
Yeah.
Maybe we don't. And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever, who created heaven and the things that therein are, and the earth and the things that therein are, and the sea and the things which are therein, that there should be time no longer. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servants the prophets. And the voice which I heard from heaven spake unto me again, and said, go and take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel which standeth upon the sea and upon the earth. And I went unto the angel, and said unto him, give me the little book. And he said unto me, take it and eat it up, and it shall make thy belly bitter, but it shall be in thy mouth sweet as honey. As I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it up, it was in my mouth sweet as honey. And as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. And he said unto me, thou must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. So here we are. Are we getting closer and closer to the tribulation? So when we read this King James Bible, or have it preached to you, whatever, that it tastes good, you know, there's a good taste in it. You enjoy that. It says there, sweet as honey. And we'll sing the song, you know, honey in the rock, my brother, honey in the rock. But when we swallow it, if we can swallow it, what does it do to us? And here's a practical way to look at that. You come to church here, and one of these days we're going to get into Timothy. And we kind of have already. And you hear what you hear. And whether it be in the pulpit or out of the pulpit, we talk about the truth. We talk about this Bible. When you hear the words of this book, you enjoy it. We like it. It's doctrinal true. It's Paul. We know we're right on. But when we take it beyond our doors into our home, is that when it becomes bitter? We swallow it when we bring it home. And do those words suddenly become bitter? Let's go on here to chapter 16. Chapter 16. Somebody got a pencil I can borrow just for a second? Just put. Thank you. I got a sermon for tonight, but I may have to come up with. Oh, sorry. I may have to come up with another one. 16, verse 10. Here we go. 16, verse 10. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt show this people all these words, and they shall say unto thee, wherefore hath the Lord pronounced all this great evil against us? Or what is our iniquity? Or what is our sin that we have committed against the Lord our God? What is that? Have you ever talked to anybody and you show them Paul? You show them rightly dividing. You show them the King James Bible, like we did at the fair. And well, why do you think God would have to do that? Is that what they're saying? Wherefore hath the Lord pronounced all this great evil against us? What did we do wrong? You know? Why do you say what you say about those words? Become they're honey to my mouth, but when I bring them to my home and my family, they become bitter. What have we done wrong within our homes? We haven't done anything wrong. We don't turn that thing on hardly anymore. I was wondering what those little letters in front of the titles meant. One probably means practically good. One probably means rotten. Or whatever. What could we possibly do wrong within our homes? This is what they say to Jeremiah. That's a good verse. Is that a good verse? Is that a good verse? Isn't that nice how we can apply that stuff today? Do you like that verse? Is it sweet as honey? But go home and think about what goes on behind your doors as a family. I'm really talking to the men here mostly because this is the one we're talking about, what us men should be doing. Do these words become bitter? Or do you say, I can't imagine what he's talking about with us. My kids are doing fine. We're doing fine. We're happy. Back off. Look at chapter 17. Verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? We know that verse. But look at verse 5. Thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusteth in man and maketh flesh his arm, and whose heart departeth from the Lord. So here we have a verse that says your heart can't depart from the Lord. Then we have a verse that says your heart is deceitful and wicked above all things. And we have Christians today that are basing every ounce of their Christianity, every ounce of their being, on their heart. And their heart's a wicked, wicked and deceitful thing. And they get confused. Look at chapter 18. Here's another one. Chapter 18, verse 1. The word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord, and isn't that just a thought? I mean, there's Jeremiah, and God tells him these things. The word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause thee to hear my words. Then you go on then to come up with one of the Great Commission sermons there, your clay and all this kind of a stuff. But do you know that God does not cause you to hear his words? In order to cause somebody, you have to make them hear it. He doesn't make us hear his words. So that's why we can't take this powder thing that serious. It makes for a good spiritual sermon. And yes, if we let him, he puts us on that potter's wheel and we spin and he can fit us all this kind of stuff. But he doesn't make us do it. In this case, he caused him to go hear his words. So just be alert to that. He doesn't make us do that. I don't know the story of the motorcycle thing. Was there anything that he shouldn't have done but did and that kind of stuff? Or is this just a good old-fashioned, typical accident? Yeah, must have been the motorcycle. You know. So anyway, you tried to cause, I imagine Marcy tried to cause him not to do certain things. I'm not sure of the story here at all, but, you know, I guess. But, you know, you just can't cause him, can you? I mean, you just can't cause him to do that. Look at chapter 18, go to verse 18. Here is how people respond to the Bible today. These are obviously not Jeremiah's buddies. Then said they, come, and let us devise devices against Jeremiah. For the law shall not perish from the priest, nor counsel from the wise, nor the word from the prophet. I mean, this Jeremiah, he's saying some things that these guys are reiterating, and we don't like this. And they say, come and let us smite him with the what? Tongue. And let us not give heed to any of his words. That's the battle today. It was the battle for Jeremiah in its day because God told Jeremiah what to say, so he would go out and he would say it. And their response to him was to smite him with the tongue, say things back, and not listen to his words. And what offends people today? What offends people today? Sticks and stones? Words. That's when I was a kid, which was quite a while ago apparently, I wasn't supposed to let what people say bother me. And I suppose they kind of did a little bit because I gave them plenty to say, but we'd always look back at them, stick our tongue out and go, yeah, 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 sticks and stones break my bones, but words sure don't bother me, or whatever you were supposed to say. And now today, words offend people. And this is what they went after Jeremiah with. Words. Look at chapter 19, verse 2. And go forth unto the valley of the son of Hinnom, which is by the entry of the east gate, and proclaim there the words that I shall tell thee. What's the significance of this thing? Well, he's got to go to this place, and he's got to tell people what he's supposed to tell them. Right, obviously, the words from God. What is the valley of the son of Hinnom? Look at 2 Kings. Now, many years ago, I think it was my first year here, it was one of my first weeks here, and 2 Kings chapter 23. And I remember I mentioned this in a Wednesday night class, Wednesday night session, whatever. And somebody heard me say this, and they said, what do you mean? How can this be so true? And this is 2 Kings 23, verse 10. And he defiled Topheth, which is in the valley of the children of Hinnom, that no man might make his son or his daughter to pass through the fire to Molech. And also look at 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles chapter 28. Just over a little ways there to your right. 2 Chronicles 28. Are we ready for this one? Second Chronicles 28, verse 3. Moreover, he burnt incense in the valley of the son of Hinnom, and burnt his children in the fire, after the abominations of the heathen, whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. My whole point about Jeremiah, where he was told to go to the valley of the son of Hinnom, and tell people what I tell you to say. What was going on at this place? People, and even says kids, were being sacrificed to the fire. It was a sacrifice place. So go there and tell people what God has to say. Where do kids today go to be sacrificed? And you might think that this is, again, an anti-public school message, but it's gone beyond that now, because kids are sacrificed almost anywhere. And when that person asked me, why would I say that about the schools here in town? And I said, listen, I've got all my paperwork from my staff meetings, all the things that we were told at the teachers' meetings. I'll do a sermon on Sunday, and I'll talk to you about the schools in general. I'll do a whole sermon on it, that way I can prepare this thing. And remember, he didn't come, but I think there were three or four others in town that were school people. Remember that? And I walked up that back step, and I saw that, and I heard about that, and I thought, oh man, Lord, do I have a backup sermon? And I didn't. And I had to preach that thing. And I could just tell. I mean, I pleaded and I begged for people to hear this. Get past the subject matter and hear this, because that's the valley of the son of Hinnom, where the kids are being sacrificed. And I don't know of anybody today that hasn't been sacrificed to some degree or another. However, it's no longer just a public school. There are people sacrificing their kids in their own homes. That's how far gone we've gotten. Somehow, us men have got to get a hold of this Bible and do something for the sake of our children. Otherwise, this is no different than the valley of the son of Hinnom, where they're sacrificed. Just keep that in mind. Let's look at Jeremiah 19 still, verse 15. I'm sure there are going to be parents that are going to say to me, like I said to Jeremiah, oh, stop it. We're doing fine. I would imagine there's probably even some kids that were being tossed into that fire at the valley of the son of Hinnom that were saying, go ahead, Dad. This is what needs to be done. You suppose? I imagine some of those kids have been prepared for that whole thing. I mean, there's kids in Iran and Iraq and all those Middle East countries that are brought up hating Jews, and they're brought up that if they can strap a suicide bomb on their chest and blow themselves to bits and take Jews and Americans with them, they've done right. Is that a sacrifice? I mean, that's terrible. But those kids wanted that. But I bet you none of those kids had to do that. Can you imagine? I'm sure you probably have thought about this. To strap a bomb to your children and tell them to go someplace, and when you hit the little button right here, you know they wouldn't do it. unless you taught them from the beginning that that's what they need to do. Or you put them someplace where they'll teach them that. So that whole sacrifice thing in the fire, it's not just public school. Homeschools, homeschool curriculums, our relatives, our own homes, homes we go to visit. You go to stores. I mean, what are you going to do? You're sacrificing your kids to the world at some degree or another. And what do? Well, there's things you can do, but that's not to talk about now. Just be aware. If you can just be aware of the fact that this country is the valley of the Son of Heaven, where kids are being sacrificed, people are being sacrificed, teenagers, young adults, they're all being sacrificed. Unless you get a hold of that King James Bible and get a hold of this stuff and make some changes. Chapter 19, verse 15. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel. Verse 15. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring upon this city and upon all her towns all the evil that I have pronounced against it. Can you imagine God putting all the evil that He's ever pronounced against us and against you, against anything? Well, I'd have to say, if I can say it, He did do it. But He did it to Himself. We have to remember all that He went through on the cross. And the preliminaries, and the shame, and the beatings, and all that stuff. That was wicked. That was evil. But now look at the last part of that verse. Why would He do that? Why would God put all that evil that He pronounced against these towns? Because they have hardened their necks, that they might not hear My words. You know why some of this stuff doesn't make it past your front door into your home? Remember the thing about the tastes good, tastes like honey, sweet as honey? Even some of those hard verses taste good because you like to hear the truth, and you can take it. But when you take it home past your front door, and it becomes bitter, is it possible because you've hardened your neck so you don't hear it within your home? I mean, who knows about your home? Just you and God. So it's easy to get away from it within our home. Are you hardening your neck to what you know you shouldn't be doing within your own home? And again, I'm probably talking mostly to parents. Do you ever do anything with your kids, grandkids, that you know you shouldn't? Are you hardening your neck so you don't have to hear what that Bible says about that stuff? Chapter 20, verse 7. Let's go to chapter 20, verse 7. We've got a few minutes left yet. Here we go. Speaking of homes. Verse 7. O Lord, this is Jeremiah talking. Now this is a real good whine. I mean, if you want a whine, here's a good one. And I would have to say it's probably better for a pastor to whine this one. O Lord, Thou hast deceived me, and I was deceived. Thou art stronger than I, and hast prevailed. I am in derision daily. Everyone mocketh me. Now, you know, that's not just a pastor statement. I mean, you're trying to dress right, talk right, do right, learn Paul's kind of stuff and everything, and you can be mocked. You're in derision daily. And if you're not careful, you can get mad at God. God, why would you even expect this? Do you even expect me to dress like this? Do you expect me not to go here? Do you expect me to stop doing these things within my home? Why is that? They mock me. They mock me within my own home. Ever been mocked within your own home? That's a horrible thing. Parents, you should never mock your children in your own home. What does Paul say? He didn't come here to what? Shame. He came to warn. Can parents not warn their children anymore without mocking? Can they not warn their children without trying to trip them and show them that they really aren't what they say they are? Why must we mock? Verse 8, for since I spake, I cried out. I cried violence and spoil, because the word of the Lord was made a reproach unto me and a derision daily. Did you ever tell somebody scripturally why you're doing what you're doing? I mean, here's why. Here's why I'm being modest. Here's why I don't go here anymore. Here's why I don't want to turn that knob anymore. Here's why I don't want to watch that. I don't want to go here. I don't want to visit those people or whatever. It's because it's the word of the Lord that gets reproached. Made a reproach unto me. Then I said, I will not make mention of him, nor speak any more in his name. There's your statement. Jeremiah says, I'm done. I would imagine anybody trying to do some right things in their lives, trying to follow Timothy a little bit or a lot, or just trying to make some changes, there's going to come a time where you're going to say, I will not mention of him nor speak any more in his name. I'm done. I'm going to quit doing this. Now, who's hassling him? Look at, just go verse 9. But his word was in my heart as a burning fire shut up in my bones. And I was weary with forbearing, and I could not stay. What's he saying? You know what he's saying. We've been over this before. Jeremiah wants to quit, but he can't. He can't. You know you're dressing better. You know you're learning. You know you're trying to not do this. You're doing better. You know you're trying not to go places anymore, and you're doing better. Maybe you even have a victory. Maybe you're actually covered up. Maybe you don't go to those places anymore. Maybe you don't treat your children that way anymore. Jeremiah couldn't quit. Look at verse 16. Here's the problem. Or here's what makes it really hard. Verse 10. It looks like a 6 in my eyes. Verse 10. Who is hassling Jeremiah that he would get to this point? For I heard the defaming of many, fear on every side. Report, say they, and we will report it. All my familiars watch for my halting. Who's a familiar? Well, what's the word in there? Family. People you are familiar with, people that are familiar with you. They're watching for you to trip up. This is why Jeremiah wanted to quit. People that were his familiars were trying to get him to mess up. And he finally just said, I can't do this anymore. I mean, who cares if some of those all those people at the fair would come over and harass us? I mean, you know, right? Were you there when that lady walked up and stood there and just looking over this whole booth? We didn't have the church name on there this year. And she was looking all over that booth. And she said, where are you folks from? And we said, Touche. Oh, yeah. I should have known that. Gone she went. You know, I mean, it's a sad thing to see that. I wish I could sit down and show her this stuff. But I didn't lose any sleep over that lady. You know? But to sit there and be able to talk to Ashley, Bob's daughter, with her friend. And it was mostly talking to the friend as kind of a, what do you call it, to get to Ashley. Detours? I'm just trying to show this girl, because she never heard this before either. She goes to Faith, no, Trinity Baptist Church. So she's a Baptist even. Never heard this stuff at all. Doesn't surprise us, though. I mean, that's just the way it is. So that was family. And there's Dad sitting right there, just eating this up. My daughter is hearing this whole Genesis to Revelation rightly divided thing. Marvelous, marvelous. And yet, it hurts when a family whacks on you. And this is why Jeremiah wanted to quit, because it was people that he knew that were hurting him. You know, you walk into a store, and I mean, man, you stick out like a shelf that fell over in the store. I'm not sure how that compares, but you know, you know, big shelf, small shelf. What was on the shelf? I don't know, canned milk or whatever. But you walk into these public places like this, people look at you and they kind of mock you. They kind of laugh at you. They think either you're a Mennonite or a Amish or you're a Bible believer from Touche. I mean, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, it doesn't bother you. But if one of your family members, your mom or your dad or your kids, look at you or your uncles and your aunts and your grandpas and your grandmas, or maybe church people or just people that you're familiar with, they mock you, that's when it hurts. That's why Jeremiah wanted to quit. That's why we will want to quit, just because we're not getting anywhere here. And people are rejecting his words. That's why we want to quit. What this community does with what we're preaching here, I don't lose any sleep over it. Doesn't bother me. I mean, I wish I could show them, because their concept of what they've been taught over these last 20 years is wrong, and I certainly wish I had the chance to show them. But no, it's us. When our ears are plugged and our ears don't hearken to what we hear, that's when you want to quit. And last one, chapter 22. Have we done that one already? No. Now, this is just a summary of what Jeremiah's talking. We'll be done here with that. Jeremiah 22, verse 5. Lord really puts it to them if they don't hear his words. But if ye will not hear these words, I swear by myself, saith the Lord, that this house shall become a desolation. So we know that he's going to destroy this stuff. But what was interesting to me in that verse is look at what God says. He says, I swear by myself. I mean, he's God. So he can do that. I can't how else to explain that. But God says, I swear by myself, and it's my word. And do you find any men today that are what they say they are? Well, God is. He's so much that way, he can say, I swear by myself that I'm going to destroy that. It would be something if men today could have that kind of a integrity and character in us. We couldn't say that, but that our word meant what we said. Wouldn't that be something? Well, God meant what he said, and he could swear up by himself that he would do that. And you know what he did? He did just that. I hope we find a man somewhere that is what he says he is. In a good manner. Because we can all say we're scumbag level 10, and we're right. But I like to see some men who aren't 10s in the bad way and really are what they say they are, as far as a Bible-believing Christian. Wouldn't that be something? Okay, we're done. We'll go upstairs in a couple minutes.